Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
This is Talking to Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We are here together again, bright and early, to reflect on Manchester United making it through to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup with that last-minute win at Nottingham Forest. We'll preview the Manchester derby on this podcast as well, if we dare, and we'll also round up some other bits and bobs that are going on with Manchester United at the moment. I'm very pleased to say that once again we have a full house. We've got Laurie, we've got Andy, and we've got Carl dancing away in a Nottingham hotel room. It looks lovely, Carl. Some nice mirrors.
Yeah. The Athletic. No expense spares when they send me to Nottingham. It's quite nice.
Yeah, good. You were at the match last night. How was it?
Scrappy. I'd say right now Manchester United aren't good, but they are finding moments that are good enough to get you there. So running on fumes, but still running. I'll take that.
Yeah, scrappy, says Carl. What says Laurie?
Yeah, it was excruciating at times, wasn't it? I mean, that first half was really tedious. And yeah, obviously relied on a moment of set-piece quality, really. I mean, that combination Fernandes and Casemiro has worked before. Let's whip it out. Let's work it again. It was basically how Liverpool won the Carabao Cup final, wasn't it? Get a moment of set-piece, except their match was because they had a load of kids on, and that was the only way they could do it. United were, okay, they weren't at full strength, but it was a sort of decent side at least. Although I will say that, again, he's having to shuffle his defence around, isn't he? And I know that City can do it and interchange the back line and it not affect the performances, but Ten Hag just doesn't have the players at the moment to swap in and out and allow his team to play the same way, passing out from the back. I mean, particularly Amrabat at left back in the first half, I thought was really bad. Switched him to right back in the second half, bit better coming into midfield, and actually played a few nice passes. But yeah, it was one of those where you're just thinking, thank goodness United have scored late on. Nobody wanted extra time and nobody wanted a defeat.
I was sat in the pub. I was a bit disappointed there wasn't extra time. I was looking forward to a couple more pints, to be honest. But
give a nice little shandy, did you?
Never mind. I helped myself to one afterwards just to celebrate the win. Andy, what did you think? I mean, obviously, we'll get into the specifics of the different aspects of the win and the performance, but the general feel of it, a win's a win, I guess. That's the be-all and end-all at the moment, isn't it, really?
Job done. End of. It was scrappy. It wasn't pretty. United, I thought, started quite well. Created three very good chances inside the first 20 minutes, should have scored. But the team are into the next round. It's a home draw, thankfully, against Liverpool. And we can live in excitement for a couple of weeks. The season would have been over if Manchester United would have lost at Nottingham Forest. And this podcast would have been so glum. But instead of that, it'd be slightly glum because we've got City at the weekend. But we know that Liverpool's round the corner. Great way to win a game. Late goal in front of 4,400 travelling fans. Casemiro set up by Bruno Fernandes, really clever at how they worked it. So we can pick holes all over, but it was so much better than Forest last time round.
Oh yeah.
And these are small mercies, but you know, the season somehow trundles on a little bit.
What was that away in like, Carl, last night?
Good. Really, really, really good spirits, honestly. They had really good banter back and forth with the Forest fans. There was a moment I should have recorded it, really, where the away fans keep going, United, Forest fans responding with a certain word back.
We heard that on the TV.
I heard that, yeah.
Good. Yeah, United's away sport is always in good spirits. They always enjoy the trip to the City Ground, and thankfully, they were duly rewarded with a winning moment right near the death.
Andy, have you got yourself involved with the failed attempt so far to develop the City Ground? I just wondered your take on it, really.
Right.
This seems even more complex than Old Trafford, I have to say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Nottingham City Council, they're not covering themselves in glory.
Yeah, they're not messing about.
Are they, Andy?
So all Forest need to do is rebuild the main stand. The rest of the ground is pretty nice. Trent End was done for Euro 96. Bridgeford End was done before that. And when Forest won two European Cups, which is one more than Manchester City, they built the Brian Clough stand opposite. So the Peter Taylor stand, the main stand, it's really not fit for purpose. It's too small. And there's been really grand plans for a long time. I think it will be done. The ground enjoys a very privileged position by the River Trent. I love walking over the River Trent and seeing the floodlights. United didn't play there for 24 years and have played there four times in the last 13 months. But I think it will happen. I'm not into the intricacies of local Nottingham planning bylaws. I'm going to let you down on that one.
Maybe this afternoon.
I have seen the plans and it holds 30,000 at the moment. It's going to push it up towards 40,000. Get it done.
Get it done. So we're not filing Nottingham Forest with Bournemouth then. That's good. I'm quite pleased and relieved about that. Thank you for that, Andy. I always enjoy your
I love how he didn't disappoint there. You asked and he delivered.
Oh, did he?
Although he wasn't au fait with the complexities of Nottingham Council's leasehold arrangement and the price that they're now asking for development.
I've got pictures on my phone of the idealised proposed stand, and you carry on and I'll show you just to prove I'm not
lying. Should you have those photographs? That's my question.
He's got these photographs in, like, you know, those like locked away photo album on his phone.
And
he's, yeah. Everyone usually thinks that it's something else, but actually no, it's stadium
porn.
It's blueprints for the City Ground.
Quick, delete it, Andy, delete it.
Bit of blue.
Right, let's talk about some of the specifics. We'll start in defence, because that's where Erik ten Hag started in his press conference after the game, and it was yet another back four lineup. Now, not even taking into account switches in game like last night when Amrabat and Dalot swapped over, or at times there's been different ways that the centre-backs have lined up from match to match. There's been 23 different back fours for Manchester United in all competitions this season. That's in 37 matches, which is startling. And the one last night was brand new. That had never been used before. Dalot, Varane, Lindelof and Amrabat to start with. I'll ask you this as well. Anyone want to hazard a guess at what Manchester United's most used back four is in the starting lineups this season? It started together four times.
This is like one of those questions, you know, with the treble team, when everyone has their ideal treble team 99, it only started like once together, didn't it? Like it's like this weird thing in football history that always happens.
I want to say Diogo Dalot left back.
Dalot left back, correct.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to say Johnny Evans.
Johnny Evans, correct.
Whoa, this is good.
Harry Maguire, right centre back.
No.
Ooh.
Rafa Varane.
And then Wan-Bissaka right back.
Yeah, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Rafael Varane, Johnny Evans, Diogo Dalot. They've started four games together.
I would never have got that.
Oh, that is incredible.
Unbelievable. And you mentioned 99, Laurie, and how many times that team started together. How many times do you think Manchester United's fairly recognised first choice back four of Dalot, Varane, Martinez and Shaw have started together this season?
Oh, this season?
Yeah.
Did they start together once at Spurs or twice with Wolves? Was it the very start of the season?
I'm going three times.
Three times. Kyle, any advance?
One.
Newport County away in the FA Cup on the 28th of January. That's the only time.
Wow.
So when you consider all of that, there is grounds for Erik ten Hag to complain and justify some of the issues that they've had, surely.
Well, he says it's never an excuse, but he does obviously repeat it, so he kind of it's difficult to say it's not an excuse, really. But I had a look at this stat back in start of January, and it was 19 at that point, different back four configurations. So you're saying it's 23 now, so that's four more in the space of, you know, like 6 weeks. So it's just a regularly occurring situation for him. And I suppose the additional thing to say on that is that the player that he bought for the back four was Lisandro Martinez. He was the one that is going to change the way he could play, and we saw that his best last season, and then obviously gets that injury, gets injured again, gets injured with his knee a third time just when it's looking like it's going to be more secure. You know, that West Ham game, I know it wasn't perfect, but it looked like a pretty comprehensive, well, it was a comprehensive victory. He's not actually got the style of players that he wants.
No, and he's played that infrequently, Martinez, that he's only been part of six different starting back fours this season.
What's that? Come on. We need double figures for that kind of start if you're going to be anything as a Man United defender.
It's crazy, Carl, though, isn't it?
It's remarkable. I looked at the quotes from the December defeat and Ten Hag said, it's just so hard to build consistency and build these routines. Yeah, this is something Ten Hag brings up a lot of time. The team can't play the way he ideally wants them to play because they haven't got enough time to learn off each other and learn each other's movements. You watched that first half last night. Amrabat, bless his heart, didn't know where to stand for three or four phases. I think he was told that when United crossed the halfway line, he could invert into central midfield. But there were two or three times where you sort of make the pass to Garnacho, try and drift inside, and Garnacho, what are you doing? Not now. And you just kept seeing this confusion on a lot of players. You know, Rafael Varane played at left centre-back again, which, again, raised eyebrows from me because Ten Hag seemed quite insistent that these things weren't always possible, and yet now he's having to just make slight tweaks here and there. Everything is uneven because you're playing so many square pegs in so many round holes.
And just on that as well, so the style of play that he wants, obviously, ideally, is a high line, so you can all bunch up, be compact, the forwards can press high, but you just can't really play that with the players that he's got. You know, Varane likes to drop deep.
All right, Jamie.
Maguire likes to drop deep. I'm just saying how it is. And then you get these gaps in midfield, and, you know, that's what all the counter-attacks come from and the cutback goals. And I don't know how much it is Ten Hag saying, OK, guys, I'm just going to be a bit more pragmatic here. You can have a bit of a lower defence if you want. Or it's the guys, when they're on the pitch, at those moments, just sort of naturally going that way. And he said it last night, didn't he? The principles, and, you know, he might, you know, great on some players if he's going over these kind of points, but clearly he feels like in the games, they don't necessarily fulfil what he's asking for, so he kind of maybe feels like he has to repeat himself.
It's a major problem, and it's a legitimate excuse. I still think that too many of the players who are starting are not playing well enough, and I don't think that Ten Hag should be exonerated. I think it wasn't unreasonable to expect Manchester United to be better against Fulham at the weekend, for example. He talked about how his team are consistent, and if you're looking at 2024, yep, there is some consistency there. It all feels so fragile. Going back to that word which I asked him at Luton, Amrabat, look, it's brave of the lad to play there and to play out of position, knowing that he's likely to be exposed. And Nottingham Forest in the first half, they absolutely went for him. He wasn't as fast as their attackers.
I did wonder if Nuno did United a favour by putting Origi on Amrabat instead of putting Elanga on.
There were a couple of times where he was done for pace. And
yeah,
Forrest in the first half, I think they tried the long ball. And in the second half, they changed slightly. They had more success down the right-hand side. But it didn't look good for Amrabat in the first half. I thought he was significantly better in the second half, I have to say. Yeah. I know he switched position. I thought he had a good energy about him. And look, he started this season never thinking he would be playing at left back, and he's played left back four or five times now.
I'm right back now.
It's not ideal for him. It's not ideal for the team. And we're in this situation. And we started talking about this because of the changeable defence. It's not helping anyone. The team are missing key players. And it shows. You get away with it against Forest sometimes, although we lost at Forest last time. What happens when we play against a team like... When we next play in City?
Not sure. Don't tend to look for that fixture very often. The thing with Amrabat as well, Andy, he played 5 minutes in a couple of sub-appearances for United post the Africa Cup of Nations, and his last start came on the 17th of December, so he's going to be rusty, isn't he, a little bit?
He's on his way out. It's not been a loan
that
has worked out. I'm sure he's highly motivated. I'm told he's a decent lad. I'm told he's got a good relationship, and he winds Diogo Dalo up about knocking Portugal out of the World Cup for Morocco when we had this incredible unity. I don't think he would have been signed if Manchester United wouldn't have had injuries at the start of the season. He probably over-celebrated because people had this idealised version of what they'd seen in the World Cup. But right from the start on this podcast, I was quoting people whose job it is to watch players like him in Italy, and they were saying, why has he been signed? And we've seen the answer to that. He's had a couple of decent games, but he has stood out because he's been targeted. And last night, I thought he was targeted at least in the first half. So it's to his credit that he improved in the second half.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So that's the defence then, into midfield. Anthony got his start, Carl, didn't he?
He did. he hit the woodwork in the first 3 minutes after a well-worked set-piece routine.
That's nice.
And I think that was his highlight. He played 75 minutes when he went off. Forest fans were chanting, what a waste of money. It's difficult for him because his attacking endeavour is always going to be limited because he's so predictable. He's so left-footed that Forest defenders knew, just cut off the easy pass inside and then you can force him backwards. However, if I'm trying to be very polite and charming, he did offer a lot of defensive endeavour. There were two or three moments when Amad Diallo came on from the 75th minute for Anthony. And on more than one occasion, after Amad was introduced, Bruno Fernandes was just screaming and shouting at him about defensive positioning. There was one particular counter-attack where Amad had just lost his runner. He'd gone into midfield. Victor Lindelof sort of scrapped and scrambled and took a tactical foul to get a booking. And Bruno just ran over to Amad and just going, you know, berating him. What are you doing? What's your runner? This is what you have to do. This is what you have to do. There was another throw-in where Bruno really got into Amad and tore chunks off him. And that was one where I know a lot of listeners to this podcast are going, what's Amad got to do to get starting, to start for United at this point in time? And I do think he's got to do some of what Anthony's able to do. Anthony's, of all the United players, Anthony knows what Ten Hag wants the most out wide. And that will give him a minor advantage over players like Amad, who can go both ways in wide positions, or Garnacho, who can go both ways. So, yeah, damning with fake praise about a £85 million winger, that the thing he really brings is defensive endeavour, but he did bring defensive endeavour.
Yeah, and there's always been the thing about balance and shape and stuff, like you say, related to the fact that, you know, Ten Hag has the relationship with him from Ajax and now obviously a couple of years at United. The interesting thing about Anthony, Andy, has been the way that Ten Hag has spoken about him in the press conferences as well. He didn't hold back after the Fulham game, but then really did come out and defend Anthony ahead of this match. He got the start as well. And even talked about his pace over the first 10 yards, which seemed like a strange comment.
Anthony will be Ten Hag's biggest failing if he doesn't work out. So it's in his interest to talk up the stock of Manchester United's third or fourth most expensive
second,
ever player,
I think, behind Pogba.
And he's still quite young. And a shot of confidence from your boss is going to do him no harm. And we don't know what's going on in the life of Anthony or has gone on this season. You know, he's a kid out of a favela in Sao Paulo. You know, he's been the main man at Sao Paulo and at Ajax. Interestingly, I watched what I watched last night. I watched it on TV. I saw Alan Shearer being quite critical of him. But he hit the crossbar after free, didn't he? As he tried to guide that shot in from the corner. He also did really well getting back to stop Elanga just after half time. Took a weaker shot. But I spoke to some people who know more than I do about last night. And they acknowledged that he struggled in possession, but praised him out of possession. And Rashford and Bruno, actually. And Scott McTominay. So I could see exactly what Carl says, that Anthony's following what the manager wants. But he wasn't brought to run back and nick the ball away from a Nottingham Forest attacker in his own half. He was brought to be an attacking danger for Manchester United. He's incredibly skillful. Ten Hag talked about his pace over 10 yards. Unfortunately for him, he's become a little bit of a scapegoat. He's had a difficult second season. I still think he's incredibly talented. I've not given up hope on him. I'm not in the position that I've been in with Anthony Martial. but he's got to deliver. He's got to do it. He's got to do it in a big game as well. He started last night, so that was a big step up from where he was at Fulham at the weekend when he looked to have been completely sidelined. And I don't think he did too bad. I don't think he did as bad as Alan Shearer was saying. He needs one of them efforts to go in. You know, just the efforts that are in the crossbar. He needs a complete change in fortune. And he's got the talent to do it. Whether that'll work out at United, I don't know the answer.
Bring it on Sunday, Anthony. All is forgiven if that happens.
There you go. I was going to say, Andy, would you start him on the weekend?
Well, my understanding on Thursday morning is there's going to be no changes in terms of who's injured or not. So I see more encouragement in his performance against Forest than negatives. I probably would. Probably would. Yeah. I mean, he's when he's playing well, he's a threat.
Scored at the Etihad before.
But he hasn't been playing well.
What's the alternative, Carl?
The alternative is now a Forson, who is just, you know, a greenhorn. You've got Ahmad, who we just discussed his defensive positioning. You can move Bruno Fernandes on the right-hand side, which I very much don't enjoy.
He did that in one derby, didn't he?
Yeah.
I'd start Anthony over both those other players you mentioned.
Well, the other thing is, he's gone from having a hierarchy, it seemed, of Forson, Ahmad, Anthony at the weekend to then, at Forest, having a hierarchy of Anthony, Ahmad, Forson. So it's a bit unclear, actually, what the pecking order is there recently.
I think against Nottingham Forest, where United are expected to dominate possession a little bit more. Okay, yeah, United away from home. But if you're expecting a bit more of the ball, then Anthony's a bit more useful than Forson, who I think will be more of a counter-attacking threat at this point in time. Ten Hag repeated on two occasions that he thinks Anthony is one of the fastest players over 10 yards. And it's one of those stats where, you know, I've seen all the United forwards run in a sprint on a counter-attack. And you're going, oh, this is quite nice. But the problem is when Anthony gets on the ball as part of that counter-attack, you're like, oh, he's going to keep taking his left foot. He's making possession really easy for a defender to get off of. And I think it's one of those things where running stats don't quite tell the entire picture. Diogo Dalot is the fastest player at United this season. He's got the highest top speed. But even then, of all the things I'm going to say are really good about him, I'm not starting with his speed in a straight line.
Maybe it's his speed in a circle. He does spin quite fast. So, I mean, that for me felt like Ten Hag basically had come down quite hard on him after the Fulham game,
yeah,
because he knows him, because he thinks he needs to give him a kick up the arse, but then thought, okay, I've done it once. You're going to come at me again with these questions from journalists. I'm going to defend him and I'm going to, you know, kind of pick out something that you might not think of that I'm telling you is the case. I don't know. You know, it feels like a fair enough defence of a player he's bought. When you say about the cost of Anthony, you know, Ahmad obviously 37 million. I mean, that was 130 million pounds of winger talent that's been at United for like 5 years, 6 years combined.
And you consider the 73 million talent that's currently in Germany.
Yep.
That's obviously something to be looked at. I think with Anthony, he actually seems on the pitch, weirdly, like he's become he's not the bullish kind of character that he was when he first joined, if you get what I mean. Like he kind of claps his teammates for passes that are quite rubbish that he hasn't been able to control, and he like apologises quite a lot. So I think he's perhaps, he looks to me like he's trying. It's just, he just doesn't have that ability in the final third to go either way and give the defender something to think about. If he's got this 10-yard sprint, knock it past the player and go down the line. Like it just, so many times it obviously cuts in, and then the kind of counter, the speed of the attack just sort of dwindles. And yeah, I mean, I guess you're right in that. I guess he has to start at the Etihad on Sunday, really, given his pedigree and what he's done there before.
It's sort of reflective of Ten Hag being a bit more bullish in his press conferences as well. Carl, in your piece on The Athletic, him responding to the criticism of Bruno Fernandes in recent weeks, including us on the podcast, to be honest, we've been questioning him a little bit, haven't we? He called us pathetic, which...
Quite right.
Well, yeah, he doesn't know us that intimately, does he? But yeah, I just think that he is coming out fighting a little bit in these press conferences. I think we've talked on the podcast and privately about his communication, and at times you do want a little bit more from him. But actually, the last few weeks, his press conferences have been different.
He's a lot spikier. It's important to him to correct things that he believes are untrue. And when he was talking about Bruno Fernandes at full time, he said Bruno Fernandes overcame a serious injury to play.
What does he mean by that? Because surely a serious injury means you're out for weeks, doesn't it?
He was pressed on this, and then he said he didn't want to get into it. But he said that Bruno had he had done this on more than one occasion. He said last year he overcame a serious injury to play against Tottenham Hotspur, and then he said in a semi-final. He didn't specify if that was the League Cup semi-final or if that was the FA Cup semi-final. But I do remember the FA Cup semi-final against Brighton. Bruno went down and he looked really bad. Yeah. I remember turning to Laurie going, he doesn't look right. And then sort of 15 minutes later, he was running around the place like he was absolutely fine. So anything I can say right now, we don't know if it's painkilling injections he's taking or whatnot, but it seems like Bruno Fernandes is playing through a pain barrier as well as one of mental fatigue. And Ten Hag wants it to be known that for all the talk about him being petulant and whatnot, he's putting the team on his back and he's getting through. I was watching this in the stadium, so I didn't have BBC commentary. What was said when Felipe was found to have his hand around Bruno Fernandes' neck at full time?
Not as much as was said by United fans online, who compared it and contrasted it when Casemiro did the same thing and got sent off for it. So it's become a main talking point. I think this is good management from Erik ten Hag. I don't mind him coming out fighting. In some ways, he's fighting for his job as well. This is in play. I said that on the last podcast. And more of those Fulham results, I can't see him lasting beyond the summer. But if he wins the FA Cup and he finishes in a Champions League position, then I could see him staying on. Roy Keane always made the point that fans didn't realise how many times I played when I was injured. And managers really like players who play through the pain barrier. And managers really hate players who say that they can't play because they're not 100% perfect. Because players are seldom 100% perfect. And managers are not going to come out and name those players because it's a really uncomfortable thing for them to do.
Ralph Rangnick did.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. but yeah.
Not often.
Yeah. Dropping bombs when they were on the way out or as an interim manager.
They are. And we don't know what the situation is with Bruno. I remember that Brighton game. Brighton were fantastic. And you're right, he did go down. He got clattered. I think it's good management for him to come out and say that. I don't have an issue with him because fans will see things in a slightly different light. We saw a story this week that some players had asked for time off after Fulham. I've asked and asked and asked, and I cannot find any truth in that. So if the manager's going to come out and give his perspective and come out fighting, good.
When a manager says a player is playing through the pain barrier, do you grow concerned about how integral he is to the team? So there were times on Mourinho where, you know, I remember once Mourinho complimented Lindelof for playing through a groin strain, and United finished the game and were in seventh place. And I was just going, do you really need to keep pushing Lindelof at this point in time to keep him in seventh? Surely you could just find something else and just preserve Lindelof. Is it a case of there's no one else other than Bruno, so you just have to keep pushing?
You can look at it two ways. You can say it's highly irresponsible that Ronny Johnson is asked to play through the pain barrier when he's pilled up and carrying loads of serious injuries, but does it and gets man of the match and marks Zinedine Zidane out of a game. Isn't everything fantastic? Slightly different when you're 52-year-old Ronny Johnson and your legs won't move or your ankle won't move because you're paying the price. Keane was massive on this. Keane felt that he was always playing regardless, and he went to war for Ferguson all the time. And it's one reason they still don't speak today, because he felt that he didn't fully appreciate him. So it's complex and it's subjective. And there are certain players who, yeah, there's a cloud in the sky over there today. It might rain. I'm not going to be able to play today. And they get a reputation for that. And it's a difficult one for a manager to know who's a bluffer, who's a blagger, and who's willing to go to war for you. And that is what's needed. And it's all about percentages. Get to this stage of the season, we're ticking to March tomorrow. Is anyone really 100%? No, they're not. They're not at all. Because they've got the battle scars along the way.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Right, a couple of things to mop up before we talk about the derby at the weekend. First of all, it's set to be Eric Ramsey's final match as a first-team coach for Manchester United, isn't it, Laurie?
Yep, Tom Bogart over in America has done really good work on this. You got the original story that he's taken over as Minnesota head coach. So he's actually going to be the youngest ever full-time head coach in the MLS, which I think is quite a big thing. He's just turned 32. So, yeah, that puts in perspective, doesn't it, what he's been able to achieve in that time. And a lot of people will think, you know, well, you know, United set pieces haven't been very good, so is he any great loss? And that, because he originally came in as this kind of set piece coach, it was under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and Kieran McKenna, I think, had studied with him at Loughborough University, so that was the link. And he'd been at Shrewsbury before, and then Chelsea's youth coach as well, one of their youth coaches. So he kind of arrived with this perception that he was going to transform United set pieces, and quickly it wasn't really like that. He wasn't like a specialist like Austin McPhee is at Villa. We spoke about him before, haven't we? The long blonde hair, and you can always see him on
Manny McPhee's son.
When a corner goes in, he's there fist pumping. With Ramsey, I mean, listen, I suppose he does do a bit of set piece stuff, but it's more generally helping out with coaching, and he's very structured in his planning. So I think that's what Minnesota have appreciated. There's been a couple of clubs that have looked at him previously, Blackpool and Swansea. Basically, this came before the Luton game, I believe. Erik ten Hag was sort of asked about it, if he would be okay with him leaving, and I think ten Hag obviously appreciates that he's not going to stand in the way of a coach, you know, going on to become a number one. But it was negotiated that actually the best plan would be for him to stay until the derby, so they can kind of figure out who's going to take up Ramsey's responsibilities past that point. But obviously the MLS season starts very soon, if it hasn't already, actually.
Already started, yeah.
It's already started. So he needs to get over there and see what's going on. But yeah, so an interesting move, I think.
Andy, what do you make of him not being replaced?
Manager's got quite a big coaching team around him. I think for Eric, it's a great opportunity to manage at such a young age. He's prepared himself for the Minnesota winters by living in Manchester. In fact, he lived near you, didn't he?
Yes, he did. But does.
Do you let on to him?
Not exactly.
So, but you see him about, yeah?
Well, I think I've shared the tale on the pod before about seeing him holding his line as he walks down the pavement with the dog pulling him forward, and or the pram, pushing the pram forward and pulling the dog along as well.
And you've not got to the stage of breaking the ice and going, all right.
No, we've done that thing, you know, where you sort of make eye contact and acknowledge that you're aware of one another's existence, but it's
not
gone
beyond that.
Further than that. At alas, now it may never go further than that.
This is a real shame.
Any trips to Minnesota?
This could have been like a blooming relationship. You'd be meeting him for coffee. You'd be discussing Manchester United's tactics. And he's basically cutting you off right at the point where you're just about to get your first let on.
Yeah.
What are you going to do if you see him at the derby at the weekend?
Try and let on.
You've got him. Please. I'll pay you a tenner. Back. All right, Eric. All the best in America, lad.
I'll try it after the game. Let's hope we're in the mood to be able to share pleasantries after 90 minutes there, because it feels like a tall task, Carl, doesn't it, heading there this weekend?
I was racking my brain. We're going to have a piece coming out this weekend where a bunch of us all pick our starting 11 to the derby, and I was racking my brain thinking, when was the last time United went to a derby at the Etihad as the favourite? And I'm coming up blank. It's got to be before 2016, maybe even before then.
Oh, away from home.
Since Fergie, yeah.
Since Fergie, probably. That last one, when they got... no, maybe not the last. Yeah, the last one was 3-2 under Ferguson, wasn't it? Van Persie, free kick.
I don't think they've gone as a favourite, probably since like 2010. There were two excellent League Cup semi-final games. There was that huge game in 2012, which City won 1-0. I'd say that was 50-50, Vincent Kompany scored. That was probably the biggest Manchester derby in recent times in terms of its importance. But to go there as favourites, nah. United have had some excellent results there. Best one was in 18, wasn't it? 2-0 down, City celebrating, Paul Lake on the concourse. Champione, not quite yet, son. Bang, bang, bang.
The fireworks have been brought down from the roof yet? Or?
Exactly. Look, we've got a... talk about past memories, because I am as bleak going into this one as I was in the derby at Old Trafford. And I remember being put up against a City writer for the BBC, and he was giving it the old, well, I quite fancy United actually. And it just reminded me of them swats at school who pretend that they've not done any revision for their exam and then they come out with straight A's. Oh, I can't believe, because I used to believe them and think, well, that's sweet, because I've not done any either. In fact, I've done 20 minutes, so I'm in a better position than you. Come to results day, can't believe I got 16 A stars. Look at you nodding, Ian, because you were one of them probably.
Is that why you do your homework on stadiums now, Andy? And you've got,
yeah,
like,
that's why I need to do
reams and reams of documents.
Hard work, mate. It makes a big difference. No matter how hard United work ahead of Sunday, it just seems, with the team carrying so many injuries, it seems completely daunting to me. And we'll go, and probably be the only time where I go to a Manchester United game and don't think the team will win. I'm clinging to, like, freak results do happen in football. Maidstones do beat Ipswich Towns, but...
We're not quite at that level, Andy, blimey.
No, it's not that bad, but... maybe mentally, if I prepare myself to be bad.
There's not like 99 places in the English football pyramid between the two teams. In fact, there's only five, less than that maybe, four.
It feels like there's a big gap between those two teams at the moment.
It does feel like there is going to be at least one problem position.
Left back.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend at full time and they pointed, they went, Marcus Rashford at centre forward. Marcus Rashford at centre forward against City's 6-foot centre backs, and you're like, yeah, that's gonna be a problem. Rashford's been playing centre forward for the last couple of games, and it's not his best position. His back to goal game is not even to the level of Anthony Martial, let alone to the level of someone like Haaland, and that is concerning, especially now City have John Stones back and Nathan Ake back and whatnot. So how United find space and how United run in behind a back three, back four, however many, that is just strong and quick and tactically adept will be tricky. I reckon it's going to be a big, big game for Garnacho. He's really coming to his own and just, I'm going to get the team 5 yards, just going to incrementally drag this team up. I think Garnacho is going to have a big game on Sunday. But Amrabat left back? Lindelof left back? What do you fancy?
The worry is that Luton performance, I have to say. De Bruyne and Haaland clicking again. I mean, 5 goals, wasn't it, for Haaland? For the first time
4 assists.
Somebody scored that many since George Best against Northampton, I believe.
Is that right?
Yeah, but that was it. The connection between De Bruyne and Haaland was the thing that terrorised United at the Etihad last season.
Yeah.
You can just see them kind of starting to motor again. That performance, I think, sort of was a indicator of that. I know they haven't been totally in sync, perhaps since De Bruyne's come back and Haaland's had a little bit of rust. But I think that was a kind of a portent of potentially chastening afternoon for United's defenders, sort of looking over the shoulders, and some of his movement, Haaland, is you know, freakish, isn't it, for the size of him. And I think United's defenders are going to have to be just absolutely on point all throughout the game.
Yeah, that's enough praise, I think. Let's have a look at the rest of the team then, Andy. I mean, we sort of speculated a little bit there. Kobbie Mainoo will come back in. It'll be his first ever Manchester derby. He's done a lot right for Manchester United so far, and he can lead us to a derby victory on Sunday. That's what we expect, isn't it?
He's a top player. Will he come back in, or will he stay with Scott McTominay?
You're not even certain he'll bring you back in then?
I don't know.
I wondered that last night.
I don't know. I thought Scott played well, and I know that the coaches felt that Scott played well at Forest. Kobbie Mainoo has been fantastic, and I wouldn't be uncomfortable to see him starting, although I would if he was starting at left back. Don't think he's the solution there.
He can play in a few positions.
That'll be the 24th different back four if he starts at left back, just to labour that point once again. I mean, Mainoo has been a big plus for United in recent weeks. It'd be quite a big call to leave him out, Laurie, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think he'll come back ultimately, because McTominay, I think, was selected for that reason that Carl touched on earlier, that United had possession, and so him breaking into the box was going to be a frequent threat. And actually it was, you know, he had two really good chances with headers from Dalot crosses, which were really good. I mean, I need to revise my view on Stephen Warnock's appraisal of Dalot as one of the best crosses in the league. They were really good crosses, and he made them into that situation. It wasn't like it was on a plate from either time. McTominay should have done better with the first one, but I thought got really unlucky with the second one. Good movement, good header. So, but that was a specific kind of, yeah, type of play. I don't think United can play that way against City. I feel like they're going to need to have somebody who can get on the ball and just try and keep possession as long as possible and twist out of difficult situations, which is obviously what Mainoo's really good at. And just a thing for listeners, I've got a piece that's coming out on Mainoo. It might be up tomorrow. It's certainly up before the derby anyway, so I've kind of done a big backgrounder on, you know, the clubs that he came through at, his progress at United. It was really sweet, actually. I went down to Cheadle and Gatley, which was his first club, last Sunday morning. Spoke to some of the guys there and watched one of the games, and spoke to a lad afterwards who scored a couple of goals, and he basically said that, yeah, he's got Rashford on his shirt that he had at Christmas, but he's going to get Mainoo on his next shirt. So he's already kind of inspiring local people, and he has, you know, he's from the area, he's going to be one of the local lads, you know, and alongside Rashford. But in this global game, I think that's something to be cherished still. And he has, you know, he's been at United for a long time, so I kind of feel like when it comes to it, Ten Hag will select him. But is a big game for him, isn't it? I mean, away at the Etihad, but he's been unfazed by anything that he's been through so far.
Yeah, he has. That's been the major plus point for him, really, hasn't it? I mean, Carl, the other aspect, considering the issues that United have got, and I know you've asked Ten Hag about this recently, is there any chance that he might change the system? He might play a different way?
The routines and the principles remain the same, was Ten Hag's answer after Fulham. And I sort of went away from that going, okay, on your head this shall be. But you go away, you start making some dinner, you really think about what Ten Hag's saying, and I can understand why he doesn't want to change. I think against the majority of teams in the Premier League, his methodology will be successful because they've got Bruno Fernandes, they've got Casemiro, and even in their slightly diminished states, they can get a team over the line. Whether or not this counter-attack heavy style of play is going to be as effective against Manchester City is another matter. You're going to need set piece goals are going to be huge for United on Sunday. I think Ten Hag said Casemiro has more goals for United than he has for any other club, which again raised an eyebrow. Really? I'm not sure about that one.
Goals per game, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. But the importance of Casemiro's goals has been really, really big for United. And I think in the air, especially from these set pieces, from these corner kicks, he's better than anyone else would expect, unless you're watching La Liga week in, week out. I know Andy is nodding going, I told you all.
Right, I'll be positive then.
Yeah.
Onana's playing well.
Yeah.
Carry on. Dalot's playing well.
Yeah.
Carry on. Varane is Varane. And there are times against Forest where he showed why he's a world-class defender. Big Vic, you can do it, son. Centre-half, you had good games in the derby before. Casemiro, you were bought to stand out in games like this. Deliver against City. Anthony, we've already discussed him. Big, big game needed. Garnacho, big moment needed. It's been a few weeks. Do it. Fernandes, Bruno, top performance. Rashford, you've scored winners in the Manchester derby. You're a Mancunian. Kobbie, do as you did at Everton away. Left back. Let's just forget left back. Maybe don't even play a left back. Bring McTominay in. Right. Just chase De Bruyne around. Give him a little kick. And then we'll sweep 3,500 United fans over those three tiers. Get right behind the team. Everyone bouncing. Come on, Reds.
Andy, get in the dressing room before the game. Deliver that.
Telling you.
Well, if you're not for Sunday now after that, I don't know what would do the trick, but we're going to leave it there on Talk of the Devils. Andy, Laurie, Carl, thank you for being with us as always. Thank you for listening, of course. And we'll be back after the Manchester Derby, whatever happens. Take care. Thanks for listening, like I say. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Athletic.